Welcome back, voice. Welcome back to the Hemingway List. Sorry about my voice being weird. The podcast where we do things the Hemingway, coming to you live, having to hold my hand on the edge of my keyboard. Again, I don't know what's going on with this bloomin' microphone. It's bloomin' annoying the bloomin' shit out of me. Well, okay, we finished book four. Good job, guys. Book four, chapter seven was yesterday's one, and today we'll be reading book four, chapter eight. But first, let's talk. Let's talk about chapter seven and, well, the book so far. I asked you guys, tough kid, this kid, how do you think this traumatic experience might shape his future? Do you wish the dad had taken the 200 rubles, and would you have taken it? And this quack doctor needs to be stopped. Swim, said the mama fish. He said, now that we've finished book four, I can't find it. Wait, sorry. Now that we've finished book four, I find it is a can't see the forest for the trees type situation to look at each chapter in a book as a standalone. I also find online analysis helpful to me. Below is the analysis I found especially compelling. I'm fairly certain there are no spoilers. I combed through the analyses pretty carefully. I'm not sure what I think about all these ideas that Dostoevsky is giving us. So this is a Cliff Notes thing. Oh, it's quite long. Oh, it's really long. That's going to take me a good 10 minutes to read to you guys. Should we? It does look interesting. You know what? I'm going to, because I feel like I, of all people, are behind on this book. So here we go. I'll read it quick. Let's see if we can do it in five. At the end of book three, Alyosha wonders why Father Zosimov has asked him to leave the monastery. Book four is Dostoevsky's explanation. From chapter to chapter, Alyosha moves among the characters as they grapple with this assorted problems. He fast becomes the living embodiment of the elder's teachings. Each chapter illustrates Alyosha's influences. In chapter two, he travels to his father's house and listens to the frustrations that plague the old man. Then he goes to Madame Holokov's and tries to pacify young Lisa by calmly accepting her hysterical outcries. While there, he makes an effort to bring Ivan and Katerina together as lovers. Next, he goes to the cottage of the destitute Captain Snerdigov. Obviously, Dostoevsky intends us to see that Alyosha is meant for a life of activity, not for the quiet passivity of the monastery. The message of Father Zosimov is of particular importance in this book. Earlier, he emphasized the value of love and admonished his adherents to love one another. To love all of God's people. Now, he reminds his followers that simply because they have assumed a monastic life does not imply that they are more blessed than other people. In fact, from the very fact of coming here, each of us has confessed to himself that he is worse than others. He also reminds his listeners that each man is responsible for each other man and that he is responsible to all men for all and everything, for all human sins, national and individual. This speech also contains all the reasons for Alyosha's leaving the monastery. A life of seclusion does not test one's strength if he is to be a representative of Zosimov's theories. Sorry, yawning mid-podcast. The elder's ideas can be tested only in the midst of busy society. As Alyosha begins his journey from the complex world of society, he goes first to his father's house and listens to all kinds of vulgar and disgusting stories. His father tells him that he will need much money in later years to tempt young wretches to sleep with him and suggests that Ivan is trying to marry Katerina so that Dmitri will have to marry Grushenka, and thus old Karamazov will be prevented from remarrying and leaving his fortune to a new wife. In other words, to Grushenka. All these wild accusations colour more darkly Dostoevsky's portrait of Karamazov as a repulsive and bestial type. Oh, God. I'm yawning again. Isn't it weird? I'm talking at a million miles an hour and then yawning. It doesn't make sense. Throughout the confession, Alyosha is able to retain the peace of mind and never compromises his inner nature of dignity and love. In the scene with young Ilyusha, Alyosha still remains a perfectly self-contained individual. He does not even use violence when Ilyusha bites him so viciously. It is a bitter entrance into the world, stoned and bitten only because one of the Karamazov. None of this, of course, would have happened if Alyosha had remained in seclusion at the monastery. But Alyosha has made his choice according to Zosima's wishes and according to the to the dictates of the elder who told him that he must marry and become one with the world. He therefore tells the young invalid Lisa that when she comes of age, they will marry. As for another marriage, one between Ivan and Katerina, the solution is not quite so simple. They are apparently in love with each other, but both are so arrogant that they cannot come to an understanding. Part of the difficulty lies in Katerina's fantastic personality. She feels the need to suffer or to be humiliated by Dmitri, and the statement that she will never abandon Dmitri ever if he marries even if he marries Grushenka indicates the fanatical degree to which she plans to carry her suffering and martyrdom. Ivan sums up her peculiar nature well when he says that she needs Dmitri, so as to contemplate continually your heroic fidelity and to reproach him for infidelity. Sorry I keep yawning, that's really bad. It's probably not quite very pleasant to listen to. Okay, we're about halfway through this explanation. Nevertheless, it is true that she feels the need to be humiliated by Dmitri. Proof of this lies in her deep sympathy with Captain Snergiev, a man who Dmitri has humiliated. She asks Leo to take him 200 rubles as a token of sympathy, but her sympathy is of far greater than token value. Alyosha fast becomes involved in social intrigues. He doesn't fast travel. He fast becomes involved in social intrigues, but But one should be aware that there is no rancor or bitterness in his new role. Alyosha has no resentment, even following the Ilyusha accident. Quite the contrary, he has great compassion for a young boy who will try to defend his father's honour. Book 4 then places the neophyte Alyosha in a variety of new situations, and by the boy's skill in dealing with them, suggests the future potential that father's awesome sense in him. Neophyte means a person who is new to a subject, skill, or belief.
Neophyte.
From Gratiseva, Alyosha encounters the two strongest fathers figures in his life. At the beginning of the book, they both talk of old age and dying and of what Alyosha should do with himself, and Father Zosima wants Alyosha to be with his family to help them through a difficult time, and Fyodor also wants Alyosha to leave the monastery and stay with him. The men have a parallel relationship regarding Alyosha, though they are quite different. Whereas Father Zosima is most concerned about his disciples and Alyosha as he nears his death, Fyodor talks mostly about himself. Zosima wants to make sure he has spread the word about living with love and understanding to as many people as he can before he passes. Fyodor is only concerned with sleeping with as many wenches as possible. Alyosha does not try to change Fyodor, he simply listens to him. Alyosha is passive in the way he tries to help everyone around him. He does not change anyone's behavior. Instead, he does their bidding, usually giving others messages for them, and he listens. He is loving and understanding, but he does not change the course of what they are doing. Just as he wants to be by Father Zosima's side as he lays dying, Alyosha is there for his brothers
and father.
Oh, criminy. Talking with them and aiding them with when they need assistance. Alyosha provides comfort and support without actively protecting those around him. Alyosha encounters a boy, the first character, who is an even younger generation than the Karamazov brothers. The emphasis has been on the relationship between the older generation and the younger one, and this boy adds another generation to the mix. Three generations in one book. Madness. The boy has a strong sense of connectedness of families. He feels responsible for his father's honour, and he believes that any relative of someone who has wronged someone should be treated with as much disdain as the person who has committed these offences. His father also makes a great financial sacrifice by not taking Katerina's money. This family sees little generational divide. The Snergirovs see a family as one unit and all its members as are inextricable from each other. Alyosha treats Ilyusha with interest and care. But the boy clearly does not appreciate the attention. Alyosha reaches out to him and does not try to punish the boy's violence. Instead, he tries to understand his motives and feelings. Father Zosima tried to pass along salutary teachings to Alyosha, and now Alyosha is passing along these teachings to others, at least by example. Katerina is proving to be a very active character who tries to make things right. She felt as if Captain Snergirov had been wronged, and her instinct was to compensate him in some way. She actively tries to see justice done. She is also very kind. Earlier in the novel, it seemed as if she might try to gain a sort of karma by her actions, even though she knew Dmitri was in love with another woman and had disgraced her.
Oh,
God.
She vowed to be by his side. This seemed less of an expression of her love for him and more of a gesture showing her fidelity and steadfastness. She seems to relish the obvious disparity between her actions and Dimitri's. The worse he is, the better she seems to be. Katerina's motivations continue to be mysterious. She may long for humiliation, or she wants to prove to the world that she is upstanding and honourable, or perhaps she simply is very loving. She trusts Alyosha very much, and she entreats him to help her. Alyosha believes that she has good intentions, so he is very willing to help her. Captain Snergirov is a living reminder of those around him. He also reminds the reader that what abject poverty existed in Russia in the 19th century. The fact that 200 rubles is a large sum of money to him puts the 3,000 rubles Dmitri spent with Grishenka into a new perspective. Dmitri is obsessed with money, and not having his 3,000 ruble inheritance drives him to rage and violence. Dmitri acts as though this money is essential to his life, but he's far from the poverty in which the captain and his family live. The quarrel over Dmitri's inheritance now seems like a battle characterized by greed and privilege. They are concerned with impressing women, and 3,000 rubles is an amount that will allow them to continue their courting. To a family like the Snergirovs, however, 3,000 rubles will greatly provide a great deal of food and medicine. They could repair their pathetic house and alleviate their misery. Captain Snergirov refuses that money.
That could help his family, because honor and,
oh my god, dignity mean more to him than his or his family's material situation. These circumstances show that money remains of great importance in this novel. Sorry for all the... Oh, that's it, by the way. That's the recap. I don't really get anything out of that, I'm going to be honest. Like, yeah, I don't think I really missed anything. I think I had all that. I still maintain it's just... I don't know. No, I mean, this whole thing in the last chapter with the money, I found that really interesting and a good little moral conundrum. But I don't care for these characters, I'm going to be honest. They're not sinking in. They're just not. I'm also quite tired. You probably tell that by the fact I keep yawning. About an hour ago... Oh, wait, actually, no, it was more than an hour ago. A couple of hours ago, I was like, oh man, I'm getting tired. I should probably do the podcast before I fall asleep. And then instead of doing that, I went and got some McDonald's. Not for dinner. I've already had dinner. Just felt like it. And then I watched Infinity War on the couch and ate McDonald's. So now it's... Well, it's not that late. It's nearly midnight. It's 11:56 right now. So it's not that late compared to some of the other times I've done this podcast. I think yesterday's one was at like 3 a.m. But I am super tired for some reason. Alright. Good recap. There. Swim said the mama fishy. Oh, well, thank you for grabbing it out of Cliff Notes and putting it here. Techrific said this chapter was heartbreaking. Senseless pride seemed to have been a common theme among many characters in this book. Alyosha stands out with his great compassion. He has not suffered as much by comparing levels of suffering seldom leads to anything constructive. Why couldn't the captain just have taken the money and come up with some white lie for his boy? It's not really about the boy, is it? He uses it as an excuse. Suffering is the path to salvation, and so many of the characters in this book seem hell-bent to continue and prolong their own and others' suffering. Zossima recognized this, and here again that lesson is taught to Alyosha. I am Norwegian said I had a very similar reaction to this chapter. It's the one that has had the most impact on me emotionally so far, strangely. Yeah, pretty close to me too, I think. I think the chapter where the kid bit Alyosha probably had the strongest emotional impact for me. His reaction to Alyosha not getting angry at him, where that made him upset. I don't know, that struck me as incredibly sad. But this one, yeah, this one was also quite sad and quite frustrating. JMama8779 said, I feel the same way. I almost found myself shouting at the pages, you fool, take the money and start a new life. I don't think that we haven't heard the last of this situation. Sorry, I do think we haven't heard the last of this situation. He may change his mind later and accept. I am Norwegian. I am Norwegian. He said, I'm sorry, this podcast is full of yawning and coughing and blah. Huh. I'd imagined the brawl between Dimitri and the captain to happen during the evening or night. Now the whole bullying scenario clicked into place for me. The poor kid. His powerlessness in that situation is probably going to lead him obsessing about strength and power, seeking it for himself, though that might just be the anime and superhero shows I've seen speaking. Later in the chapter, we discover this to be true. Ilyusha is already plotting and fantasizing about how he can defeat Dimitri. It was precious how he first wanted to kill Dimitri, and upon being told that killing someone was a sin, wanting to overpower him and aggressively forgive him. I enjoy this chapter much more than the last. I just figured out that Ilyusha is the kid that bit Alyosha. I had no idea. Cool, that makes sense. I enjoy this chapter much more than the last. As the father described a plan to get away from the town, I felt more sympathy for him and his son than I've felt for any other character in the book so far. And I was already happy, and I was happy when he seemed to accept the money, but when he discussed the possibilities which they opened up, well, except for the mention of the quack, but still, and then the paroxysm of pride ruined it. It's interesting how much the father's mood changed him. In the last chapter, I could barely follow his dialogue, but until the end of this one, he was perfectly relatable. Starfall 15 said, "The father is worried about losing his son's respect, but he has already lost his daughter's. It might be a matter of time and might lose his son's, especially if he keeps witnessing how his sister is treating their father. He should have taken the money and made it an excuse for the source." This pride and self-sacrifice seem still running through several characters, especially Katerina and Ivanin. The amount of money, 200 rubles, will it cover all the father's plans, or was he daydreaming what he could fix with it? I'm very interested in the future of the boy. I wish Dostoevsky was able to finish the book. What? Do we not find out what happens to the boy? Is this half a book? Oh my god. Alright. That's the discussion part. Book 4, Chapter 7. Let's move on and read Book 5, Chapter 1. If I can keep my bloody eyes open. It's quite a long chapter too, wouldn't you know it? On a night where I'm literally nodding off to sleep as I talk. Golly. I'm going to get a glass of water and then finish this. Alright, I'm back. This is Book 4, Pro and Contra. Is the title of Book 5. This is Book 5, which is called Pro and Contra. Chapter 1 is called The Engagement. Madame Holokov was again the first to meet Alyosha. She was flustered. Something important had happened. Katerina Ivanovna's hysterics had ended in a fainting fit, and then a terrible, awful weakness had followed. She lay with her eyes turned up and was delirious. Now she was in a fever. They had sent for Herz and Stube. They had sent for the aunts. The aunts were already here, but Herz and Stube had not yet come. They were all sitting in her room, waiting. She was unconscious now, and what if it turned to brain fever? Madame Holokov looked gravely alarmed. "This is serious, serious," she added at every word, as though nothing had happened to her before that had been serious. Alyosha listened with distress and was beginning to describe his adventures, but she interrupted him at the first words. She had not time to listen. She begged him to sit with Liza and wait for her there. "Liza," she whispered almost in his ear, "Liza has greatly surprised me just now, dear Alexei Fyodorovitch. She touched me too, and so my heart forgives her everything. Only fancy, as soon as you had gone, she began to be truly remorseful for having laughed at you today and yesterday, though she was not laughing at you, but only joking. But she was seriously sorry for it, and almost ready to cry, so that I was quite surprised. She has never been really sorry for laughing at me, but has only made a joke of it, and you know she is laughing at me every minute. But this time she was in earnest. She thinks a great deal of your opinion, Alexei Fyodorovitch, and don't take offense or be wounded by her if you can help it. I am never hard upon her, for she is such a clever little thing. Would you believe it? She said just now that you were a friend of her childhood, the greatest friend of her childhood. Just think of that, greatest friend. And what about me? She has very strong feelings and memories, and what's more, she uses these phrases, most unexpected words, which come out all of a sudden when you least expect them. Unexpected words that come out when you least expect them. She spoke lately about a pine tree, for instance. There used to be a pine tree standing in our garden in her early childhood. Very likely it's standing there still, so there's no need to speak in the past tense. Pine trees are not like people, Alexei Fyodorovich. They don't change quickly. Mama, said she, I remember this pine tree as in a dream. She only said something so original about it that I can't repeat it. Besides, I've forgotten it. Well, goodbye. I'm so worried. I feel I shall go out of my mind. Ah, Alexei Fyodorovich, I've been out of my mind twice in my life. Go to Lisa. Cheer her up, as you always can, so charmingly. Lisa, she cried, going to her door, here, I've brought you Alexei Fyodorovich, whom you insulted. He is not at all angry. I assure you, on the contrary, he is surprised that you could suppose so. Might have been different back then in old Russia. But one thing that you learn when you are when you write prose, when you write literature, is that people don't tend to say the name of the person they're talking to as much as you would think. So if it's just you talking to one other person, you rarely would say their name to them. Like, think about that. How often do people say your name to you when they're talking to you? Unless they're trying to, like, get your attention or something like that, but, like, mid-sentence. But in this Dostoevsky, she says his full name repeatedly in between him even getting to speak. She talks for, like, a minute or two straight, which is weird. No one talks like that. Like, conversations bounce back and forth. And she keeps addressing him by his full name, which is so unnatural, so weird. Anyway, sorry. Mercy, and she also repeats. There's so much unnecessary language in this. It's just tedious to read. Like, I just want to edit it. Is there, like, an abridged version where, like, everything they try to say is just said once, effectively, rather than, like, 4 or 10 times? Because it's just so boring to read the same sentiment 4 to 10 times in a row. It's driving me berserk. Mercy, maman. Come in, Alexei Fyodorovich. Alyosha went in. Oh, who went in? Lisa looked rather embarrassed and at once flushed crimson. She was evidently ashamed of something, and as people always do in such cases, she began immediately talking of other things, as though they were of absorbing interest to her at the moment. Mama has just told me all about the 200 rubles, Alexei Fyodorovich, and you're taking them to that poor officer. And she told me all the awful story of how he had been insulted. And you know, although Mama muddles things, she always rushes from one thing to another. I cried when I heard, well, did you give him the money? And how is that poor man getting on? The fact is, I didn't give it to him. And it's a long story, answered Alyosha, as though he, too, could think of nothing but his regret at having failed. Yet Lisa saw perfectly well that he, too, looked away, and that he, too, was trying to talk of other things. Alyosha sat down at the table and began to tell his story, but at the first words of his, he lost his embarrassment and gained the whole of Lisa's attention as well. He spoke with deep feeling under the influence of the strong impression he had just received, and he succeeded in telling his story well and circumstantially. In old days in Moscow, he had been fond of coming to Lisa and describing to her what had just happened to him, what he had read, or what he remembered of his childhood. Sometimes they had made daydreams and woven whole romances together, generally cheerful and amusing ones. Now they both felt suddenly transported to the old days in Moscow, 2 years before. Lisa was extremely touched by his story. Alyosha described Ilyusha with warm feeling. When he finished describing how the luckless man trampled out the money, Lisa could not help clasping her hands and crying out, "So you didn't give him the money, so you let him run away? Oh, dear, you ought to have run after him." That's the same thing 3 times. That's the same thing 3 times. She's upset he didn't give him the money. Why do I have to say, "So you didn't give him the money," 1. "So you let him run away," 2. "Oh, you should have run after him," 3. Oh, it's so boring. "No, Lisa, it's better. I didn't run after him." "No, Lisa, it's better I didn't run after him," said Alyosha, getting up from his chair and walking thoughtfully across the room. "How so? How is it better?" That's the same question twice. Now they are forced to without food and their case is hopeless. Not hopeless, for the 200 rubles will still come to them. He'll take money tomorrow. Tomorrow he will be sure to take it. Are you kidding me right now? He'll take the money tomorrow. Full stop. Tomorrow he will be sure to take it. Full stop. Said Alyosha, pacing up and down, pondering. You see, Lisa, he went on, stopping suddenly before her, I made one blunder, but that, even that, is all for the best. What blunder? And why is it for the best? I'll tell you. He is a man of weak and timorous character. He has suffered so much and is very good-natured. I keep wondering why he took offence so suddenly, for I assure you, up to the last minute, he did not know that he was going to trample on the notes. And I think, now that there was a great deal to offend him, and it could not have been otherwise in his position, to begin with he was sore at having been so glad of the money in my presence and not having concealed it from me. If he had been pleased, but not so much, if he had not shown it, if he had begun affecting scruples and difficulties and other, as other people do when they take money, he might still endure it, to take it. But he was too genuinely delighted, and that was mortifying. Ah, Lisa, he is a good and truthful man. That's the worst of the whole business. All the while he talked, his voice was so weak, so broken. He talked so fast, so fast. He kept laughing, such a laugh. Or perhaps he was crying. Yes, I am sure he was crying. He was so delighted. And he talked about his daughters, and about the situation he could get in another town. And when he had poured out his heart, he felt ashamed at having shown me his innermost soul like that. So he began to hate me at once. He is one of those awfully sensitive poor people. What had made him feel most ashamed was that he had given in too soon and accepted me as a friend, you see. At first he almost flew at me and tried to intimidate me, but as soon as he saw the money, he had begun embracing me. He kept touching me with his hands. This must have been how he came to feel at all so humiliating, and then I made that blunder, a very important one. I suddenly said to him that if he had not money enough to move to another town, we would give it to him, and indeed, I myself would give him as much as he wanted out of my own money. That struck him all at once. Why, he thought, did I put myself forward to help him? You know, Lisa, it's awfully hard for a man who has been injured when other people look at him as though they were his benefactors. I've heard that. Father Zossima told me so. I don't know how to put it, but I have often seen it myself, and I feel like that myself too. And the worst of it was that though he did not know to the very last minute that he would crumple on those notes, he had a kind of presentiment of it. I'm sure of that. That's just what made him so ecstatic, that he had that presentiment. And though it's so dreadful, it's all for the best. In fact, I believe nothing better could have happened. Why could nothing better have happened? Cried Lisa, looking with great surprise at Alyosha. Because if he had taken the money, in an hour after getting home, he would be crying with mortification. That's just what would have happened. And most likely he would have come to me early tomorrow, and perhaps have flung the notes at me and trampled upon them, as he did just now. But now he has gone home awfully proud and triumphant, though he knows he has ruined himself. So now nothing could be easier than to make him accept the 200 rubles by tomorrow, for he has already vindicated his honour, tossed away the money, and trampled it underfoot. He couldn't know when he did it that I should bring it to him again tomorrow, and yet he is in terrible need of that money. Though he is proud of himself now, yet even today he'll be thinking what a help he has lost. He will think of it more than ever at night. He will dream of it, and by tomorrow morning he may be ready to run to me to ask forgiveness. It's just then that I'll appear. Here, you are a proud man, I shall say. You have shown it, but now take the money and forgive us. And then he will take it. Alyosha was carried away with joy as he uttered his last words. And then he will take it, Lisa clapped her hands. Ah, that's true, I understand that perfectly now. Ah, Alyosha, how do you know all this? So young, and yet he knows what's in the heart. I should never have worked it out. The great thing now is to persuade him that he is on an equal footing with us, in spite of his taking money from us, Alyosha went on in his excitement, and not only on an equal, but on an even higher footing. on a higher footing is charming, Alexei Fyodorovich, but go on, go on. You mean there isn't an expression on a higher footing, but that doesn't matter because... Oh no, of course it doesn't matter. Forgive me, Alyosha dear. You know I scarcely respected you till now. That is, I respected you but on an equal footing, but now I shall begin to respect you on a higher footing. Don't be angry, dear, at my joking, she put in at once with strong feeling. I am absurd and small, but you, listen, Alexei Fyodorovich, isn't there in all our analysis, I mean your analysis, no better call it ours, aren't we showing contempt for him, for that poor man, in analysing his soul like this, as it were from above, eh? In deciding so certainly that he will take the money? No, Lisa, it's not contempt, Alyosha answered, as though he had prepared himself for the question. I was thinking of that on the way here. How can it be contempt when we are all like him, when we are all just the same as he is? For you know we are just the same, no better. If we are better, we should have just been just the same in his place. I don't know about you, Lisa, but I consider that I have sorted soul in many ways, and his soul is not sorted, on the contrary, full of fine feeling. No, Lisa, I have no contempt for him. Do you know, Lisa, my elder told me once to care for most people exactly as one would care for children, and for some of them as one would for the sick in hospitals. Ah, Alexei Fyodorovich, dear, let us care for people as we would for the sick. Let us, Lisa. I am ready, though I am not altogether ready in myself. I am sometimes very impatient, and at other times I don't see things. It's different with you. Ah, I don't believe it, Alexei Fyodorovich, how happy I am. I'm so glad you say so, Lisa. Alexei Fyodorovich, you are wonderfully good, but you are sometimes sort of formal. Formal? And yet you are not a bit formal, really. Go to the door, open it gently, and see whether Mama is listening, said Lisa, in a nervous, hurried whisper. Alyosha went, opened the door, and reported that no one was listening. Come here, Alexei Fyodorovich, Lisa went on, flushing redder and redder. Give me your hand. That's right. I have to make a great confession. I didn't write to you yesterday in joke, but in earnest, and her eyes, and she hid her eyes with her hand. It was evident that she was greatly ashamed of the confession. Suddenly she snatched his hand and impulsively kissed it three times. Ah, Lisa, what a good thing, cried Alyosha joyfully. You know, I was perfectly sure you were in earnest. Sure, upon my word. She put aside his hand, but did not let go of it. Blushing hotly and laughing a little happy laugh. Sorry. I kiss his hand and he says, what a good thing. But her reproach was undeserved. Alyosha, too, was greatly overcome. I should like to please you always, Lisa, but don't you know how to do it? He muttered, blushing too. Alyosha, dear, you are cold and rude. Do you see? He has chosen me as his wife and is quite settled about it. He is sure I was in earnest. What a thing to say. Why, that's impertinence. That's what it is. Why, was it wrong of me to feel sure? Alyosha asked, laughing suddenly. Ah, Alyosha, on the contrary, it was delightfully right, cried Lisa, looking tenderly and happily at him. Alyosha stood still, holding her hand in his. Suddenly he stopped, stooped down, and kissed her on her lips. Oh, what are you doing? Cried Lisa. Alyosha was terribly abashed. Oh, forgive me if I shouldn't. Perhaps I'm awfully stupid. You said I was cold, so I kissed you, but I see it was stupid. Lisa laughed and hid her face in her hands. And in that dress, she ejaculated in the midst of her mirth. But she suddenly ceased laughing and became serious, almost stern. Alyosha, we must put off kissing. We are not ready for that, and we shall have a long time to wait, she ended suddenly. Tell me rather why you are so clever, so intellectual, so observant. Choose a little idiot, an invalid like me. Ah, Alyosha, I am awfully happy, for I don't deserve you a bit. You do, Lisa. I shall be leaving the monastery altogether in a few days. If I go into the world, I must marry. I know that. He told me to marry. Whom could I marry better than you, and who would have me except you? I have been thinking it over. In the first place, you've known me from a child, and you've a great many qualities I haven't. You are more light-hearted than I am. Above all, you are more innocent than I am. I have been brought into contact with many, many things already. Ah, you don't know, but I, too, am a Karamazov. What does it matter if you do laugh and make jokes, and at me, too? Go on laughing. I am so glad you do. You laugh like a little child, but you think like a martyr. Like a martyr? How? Yes, Lisa, your question just now, whether you weren't showing contempt for that poor man by dissecting his soul, that was the question of a sufferer. You see, I don't know how to express it, but anyone who thinks of such questions is capable of suffering. Sitting in your invalid chair, you must have thought over many things already. Alyosha, give me your hand. Why are you taking it away? Murmured Lisa in a failing voice, weak with happiness. Listen, Alyosha. What will you wear when you come out of the monastery? What sort of suit? Don't laugh. Don't be angry. It's very, very important to me.
I haven't thought about the suit, Lisa, but I'll wear whatever you like.
I should like you to have a dark blue velvet coat, a white pique waistcoat, and a soft grey felt hat. Tell me, did you believe that I didn't care for you when I said I didn't mean what I wrote? No, I didn't believe it. Oh, you insupportable person, you are incorrigible. You see, I knew that you seemed to care for me, but I pretended to believe that you didn't care for me, to make it easier for you. That makes it worse. Worse and better than all. Alyosha, I am awfully fond of you. Just before you came this morning, I tried my fortune. I decided I would ask you for my letter, and if you brought it out calmly and gave it to me, as might have been expected from you, it would mean that you did not love me at all, that you felt nothing, and were simply a stupid boy, good for nothing, and that I am ruined. But you left the letter at home, and that cheered me up. You left it behind on purpose so as not to give it back, because you knew I would ask for it. That was it, wasn't it? Ah, Lisa, it was not so a bit. It was not so a bit. The letter is with me now, and it was this morning in this pocket. Here it is. Alyosha pulled the letter out laughing and showed it her at a distance. But I am not going to give it to you. Look at it from there. Here. Why, then you told a lie. You, a monk, told a lie. I told a lie, if you like, Alyosha laughed. I told a lie so as not to give you back the letter. It's very precious to me, he added, suddenly, and with strong feeling, and again he flushed. It's always will be. I won't give it up to anyone. Lisa looked at him joyfully. Alyosha, she murmured again, look at the door. Isn't Mama listening? Very well, Lisa. I'll look, but wouldn't it be better not to look? Why suspect your mother of such meanness? What meanness? As for her spying on her daughter, it's her right. It's not a meanness, cried Lisa, firing up. You may be sure, Alexei Fyodorovitch, that when I am a mother, if I have a daughter like myself, I shall certainly spy on her. Really, Lisa, that's not right. Oh, my goodness, what has meanness to do with it? If you were listening to some ordinary worldly conversation, it would be meanness, but when her own daughter is shut up with a young man, listen, Alyosha. Do you know I shall spy upon you as soon as we are married, and let me tell you I shall open all your letters and read them, so you may as well be prepared. Yes, of course, if so, muttered Alyosha, only it's not right. Ah, how contemptuous, Alyosha dear. We won't quarrel the very first day. I'd better tell you the whole truth. Of course, it's very wrong to spy on people, and of course I am not right, and you are, only I shall spy on you all the same. Do then. You won't find anything, laughed Alyosha. And Alyosha, will you give it in to me? We must decide that too. I shall be delighted to, Lisa, and certainly to. Only not in the most important things. Even if you don't agree with me, I shall do my duty in the most important things. That's right. But let me tell you I am ready to give in to you not only in the most important matters, but in everything. And I am ready to vow to do so now. In everything, and for my whole life, cried Lisa fervently. And I'll do it gladly, gladly. What's more, I'll swear never to spy on you, never once, never to read any of your letters, for you are right and I am not. And though I shall be awfully tempted to spy, I know that I won't do it, since you consider it dishonourable. You are my conscience. Now listen, Alexei Fyodorovitch, why have you been so sad lately, both yesterday and today? I know you have a lot of anxiety and trouble, but I see you have done some special grief besides, some secret, perhaps. Yes, Lisa, I have a secret one too, answered Alyosha mournfully. I see you love me, since you've guessed that. What grief? What about you? Can you tell me? Asked Lisa with timid entreaty. I'll tell you later, Lisa, afterwards, said Alyosha, confused. Now you wouldn't understand it, perhaps, and perhaps I couldn't explain it. I know your brothers and your father are worrying you too. Yes, my brothers too, murmured Alyosha, pondering. I don't like your brother Ivan, Alyosha, said Lisa suddenly. He noticed this remark with some surprise, but did not answer it. My brothers are destroying themselves, he went on. My father too, and they are destroying others with them. It's the primitive force of the Karamazovs, as Father Paisy said the other day, a crude, unbridled earthly force. Does the Spirit of God move about that force? Even that I do not know. I only know that I, too, am a Karamazov. Me a monk, I am a monk. Am I a monk, Lisa? You said just now that I was. Yes, I did. And perhaps I don't even believe in God. You don't believe? What is the matter? Said Lisa quietly and gently. But Alyosha did not answer. There was something too mysterious, too subjective in these last words of his, perhaps obscure to himself, but yet torturing. And now, on the top of it all, my friend, the best man in the world, is leaving the earth. If you knew, Lisa, how bound up in soul I am with him, and then I shall be left alone. I shall come to you, Lisa, for the future we will be together. Yes, together, together, henceforward we shall always be together all our lives. Listen, kiss me, I'll allow you. Alyosha kissed her. Come now, go. Christ be with you. And she made the sign of the cross over him. Make haste back to him while he is alive. I see I've kept you cruelly. I'll pray today for you and him and you. Alyosha, we shall be happy. We shall be happy, shall we? I believe we shall, Lisa. Alyosha thought it better not to go in to Madame Holokov and was going out of the door without saying goodbye to her. But no sooner had the door opened than he found Madame Holokov standing before him. From the first word, Alyosha guessed that she had been waiting on purpose to meet him. Alexei Fyodorovitch, this is awful. This is all childish nonsense and ridiculous. I trust you won't dream. It's foolishness, nothing but foolishness, she said, attacking him at once. Only don't tell her that, said Alyosha, or she will be upset. And that's bad for her now. Sensible advice from a sensible young man. Am I to understand that you only agreed with her from compassion for her invalid state, because you didn't want to irritate her contradiction? Oh, no, not at all. I was quite serious in what I said, Alyosha declared stoutly. To be serious about it is impossible, unthinkable, and in the first place I shall never be at home to you again. And I shall take her away, you may be sure of that. But why? Asked Alyosha. It's all so far off. We may have to wait another year and a half. Ah, Alexei Fyodorovitch, that's true, of course, and you'll have time to quarrel and separate 1,000 times in a year and a half, but I am so unhappy. Though it's such nonsense, it's a great blow to me. I feel like Fumazov in the last scene of Sorrow, from which you are Chatsky, and she is Sofya, and only fancy. I ran down to meet you on the stairs, and in the play, the fatal scene that takes place on the staircase, I heard it all. I almost dropped. So this is the explanation of her dreadful night and her hysterics of late. It means love to the daughter, but death to the mother. I might as well be in my grave at once. And a more serious matter still. What is this letter she has written? Show it to me at once, at once! No, there's no need. Tell me, how is Katerina Ivanovna now? I must know. She still lies in delirium. She has not regained consciousness. Her aunts are here, but they do nothing but sigh and give themselves airs. Hurstenstube came, and he was so alarmed that I didn't know what to do for him. I nearly sent for a doctor to look after him. He was driven home in my carriage. And on the top of it all, you and this letter. It's true, nothing can happen for a year and a half. In the name of all that's holy, in the name of your dying elder, show me that letter, Alexei Fyodorovitch. I'm her mother. Hold it in your hand, if you like, and I will read it so. No, I won't show it to you, even if she sanctioned it. I wouldn't. I am coming tomorrow, and if you like, we can talk over many things, but now, goodbye. And Alyosha ran downstairs and into the street. Alright, there we go. That was chapter 1 of book 5. Have your say at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. If you can muster the enthusiasm to do so. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.